Jokic behind his back. What it tastes like, Jokic.
That's your sitter. Wow.
As long as their fans don't get disappointed, that's all I care about. So the Warrior fans can come in here. The Celtics fans can come in here. Laker fans can come in here. But take that L on the way out.
Jokic. Harris goes again.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am your host, Zach Mikosh with DenverStiss.com. You guys are listening to the Denver Stiss Podcast Network, and you're listening to this on a Thursday. We held it off a little bit so I could take the time to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I had a good one myself. I hope everybody else out there enjoyed their Christmas or their holidays or whatever they are celebrating this winter, even if it's nothing at all. We had a kind of nice, though. It gave us a little break. We didn't have a lot. It's kind of weird. The Nuggets have only played like a couple, a handful of games over the past 2 weeks. They've had a lot of time off. We did have, though, a couple games that happened last week that I still want to get to. That win over the Dallas Mavericks, and then of course the loss to the Los Angeles Clippers, the worst loss in the Nuggets seasons by a lot of measures. So I want to touch on both of those things, and then after that we'll bring in Mr. Gordon Gross, and we will have him break down that Spurs game, and then we'll preview the next Spurs game as well as the upcoming game against the Suns. So that's going to be our show. We will try and keep it nice and sweet for you guys on this one. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about those two games from last week, starting off with that win over the Dallas Mavericks. So the thing, I know it's kind of hard to like even remember it now. It seems like it was so long ago. But the main thing I remember about that game, or the main point I took out of that game, was I think we really saw what we've been kind of seeing building up for a while, which is Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray as really the last two men standing from the Nuggets starters especially. And then really when you looked at the roster of the guys you expected to be the major contributors, those are the two that are really the only ones, last guys out there standing. And I think what we're seeing is they've really embraced it. You know, they've absolutely come into the role of having to be Jokic, especially having to be a scorer, having to be aggressive, the team looking for him to put up points. You know, he really shined in that Dallas game in that role, and he was very aggressive from the beginning and stayed aggressive throughout. And that, I think we've seen that now for a few games, where he understands there's really no other option, right? There's no Paul Millsap, there's no Gary Harris, there's no Will Barton, there's not a ton of scoring punch out there, not a ton of guys who are going to average close to 20 points a game a night like they normally have. And I think he recognizes, okay, that means he needs to step his game up, where he's normally, you know, a 16 to 18 point scorer. Now he's trying to get more into that 20 to 25 point range, because he's got to make up for the absences, and he's embraced the role. And I think the thing that you hope from Nikola is that as these guys start to come back, as Gary and Paul, Will Barton, all of them start to come back, you start to see him still be that aggressive player. You know, we've seen him plenty of times defer and kind of take himself out of the game. You hope that because he's got into this rhythm now of having to be the aggressor, that he'll just keep doing that. Because the thing about it is that being the aggressor doesn't necessarily mean shooting a bunch of shots, right? Not with Nikola, at least. It's far more related to him distributing, being active in the offense, making plays, directing other players, and sometimes, yes, taking those shots, especially when the defense gives it to him. But what we saw, like, you know, in some games in the past, is where he would just, if he wasn't feeling it or whatever, then it wasn't even a matter of him, okay, I'm not going to shoot, I'm just going to do other things. Sometimes it would be he just kind of would kind of fade, especially on offense, and maybe not be as active in the flow of things. That hasn't been as big of an issue this year overall, I don't think, but I think really these past few games where we've had him as our go-to guy just because of the injuries, there's literally no one else to turn to, we've seen him blossom into that role. And so I'm just hoping he'll carry that over with Paul Millsap and Gary Harris and Will Barton, all these guys coming back. But the other thing I think that I've noticed, especially in that Mavericks game, was Jamal Murray has also really, really stepped into the light now, specifically from a point guard duty perspective. You know, he's Jamal has always kind of been this combo guard, more of a scorer first. At least that's the perception, I think, from the outside. I think Jamal has no doubts in his mind that he's capable of being a distributor and a point guard. He said that since day one. But again, when you don't have the playmakers on the floor and it's pretty much just him and Jokic, like, he's got to. You can't just have him and Jokic score 50 points each and win every game, right? That's not how it's going to work. We know that. And I think Jamal is making a more focused effort to be more of that distributor type, to be the type of guy who's going to make plays for other, because he has to. You know, I mean, Juancho Hernangómez, Malik Beasley, Monty Morris, these guys, I might actually exclude Monty from this conversation. He's quite the playmaker himself. But those guys, those guys are good. They're good shooters. Trey Lyles, who, by the way, Trey's actually played very well these past couple of games, which is nice to see. But Murray is, you know, those guys aren't the playmaker that Murray is. They're shooters, right? They're guys you want to be operating off ball. We've seen Malik and Juancho try and be more of a playmaking guys, try and take on more of that load, and it hasn't really worked well. But what we saw, especially in that Dallas game, I mean, Murray had something like 13 assists in the first half, right? We saw him really take on the onus of being the playmaker, of setting up his teammates, of getting them open shots. And to his teammates' credit, they knocked those shots down. A lot of times, Murray or Jokic or anybody on that team will get a good, you know, make a good play for another guy, and then for whatever reason they miss the shot. That was really prevalent in the beginning of the year when they were struggling so much, especially with their outside shooting. We're seeing, though, you know, it's kind of the chicken or egg thing, right? And there's probably a little bit of both. Is it the guys just knocking down their shots, or is Murray getting them better looks at their shots, and that's what's giving them these higher percentages? You know, it's probably a mixture of both. But I thought he was really, really special in that Mavericks game from the ball distribution standpoint. He really had everything working on that. And then what was nice to see is him be able to switch that gear there in the fourth quarter, as that was a tight game going down the stretch. You know, Murray went from, okay, now I'm going to stop focusing so much on distributing, and now I'm going to just take the game into my own hands and try and score as much as possible. And he did that excellently. When we've seen that out of Jamal, particularly last year, that was a really, really big part of his game, especially down the stretch of the season. He really came out there and was kind of the Nuggets' go-to guy in the fourth quarter. And he doesn't shrink from that spotlight, right? He is absolutely a person who's going to welcome that challenge and wants that challenge and wants to be the guy with the ball in his hands every night and, you know, late in the games. And when you got a guy like Will Barton, who's also very, very of the similar ilk, when he's out, you gotta find somebody else to be that guy, because as good as Jokic is, you know, it's not. I think he has a harder time turning that on like that. You know, Jokic is a guy who feels like, especially with his scoring, it's a lot more rhythm based. You know, once he gets rolling and he's getting some shots to fall, then he can really get going and really do a lot of damage, as we saw in this Dallas game. But he's a guy who probably is gonna have a harder time doing what Murray did, which is, you know, I spent most of the first half and in the third quarter just distributing for my teammates. I wasn't shooting the ball that well, but then in the fourth quarter I just flipped that switch and got those clutch buckets. I think not that Jokic can't do that, but I just don't think it's quite as easy for him to do that as it is Murray. So it was really good to see him still carry that part of the game over that he has, along with the distribution that I was talking about, the playmaking, the all the assists. I think he had something. I mean, he had a crazy, like, I think it was like 15, 16 assists in the game. So outstanding performance by both those two guys. And like I said, in that Dallas game, that was the big takeaway I had, was those two guys stepping up with all the injuries and really becoming the players you hope they are, even when all these other guys come back. You're hoping these moments that they're having right now will carry over, because it'll just make them that much more potent, right, to know that they have those two guys. The only other thing I took away from that game was the technical call on Jamal Murray for hanging on the rim. It one of the more ridiculous technical fouls that I have seen, not even the most ridiculous one though I saw this week, but, you know, it was just very, very interesting call. And the thing that makes it more interesting is the guy who called it, because it was Rodney Mott, who there's a history there, right? Rodney Mott had, I believe he's tossed Jokic from a game before for a fairly, it seemed like a fairly unfair rule. I can't remember if it was Jokic or it might have been Malone. I think he maybe tossed Malone from a game, and it was pretty, it seemed pretty flimsy of a standing. The thing about hanging on the rim, though, was it was, I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't, I didn't think it was emphatic. I mean, he did do a pull-up per se, which is embellishing a little bit, sure, but it seemed like a really quick whistle on that tee. And then the reason I want to bring it up is, of course, we know what happens in the Clippers game, right? Zach Zarba tees up Jokic in the second half and then right just does one right after the other. I mean, it wasn't even like he teed him up and then Jokic talked to him a little bit longer and then he said, okay, nope, you're gone. It was Jokic complained and it was just quick 1-2, all right, you're done and you're out of the game. Now, obviously, that had been building, right? I know I'm not here to say that Nikola Jokic wasn't sitting there arguing with the refs for a lengthy period of time or wasn't deserving certainly of one technical. I thought he was building up to that. I thought he almost even wanted that just to get his point across, like, hey, you know, if you're not going to give me the calls, you're going to have to tee me up. But to give him two for what do they call it, an air punch, which is that, what a bullshit. Sorry for any children listening, but that's a garbage excuse for that call. It was very much a ref getting caught up in the emotion of a guy who's been complaining to him all night and a guy who probably has a reputation for complaining amongst the officials, a guy who might have a reputation for flopping. We all saw Marcin's Gortat's comments after the game, which, by the way, Nikola Jokic is not the greatest flopper in the NBA or the biggest flopper ever in the NBA. That is still absolutely, I mean, he's not, we could talk about guys like James Harden or Manu Ginobili, the father of flopping, Danilo Gallinari, former Nugget. I think there's a couple of other guys you might put ahead of Jokic, at least in my mind, when it comes to who is the biggest flopper ever in the NBA. But certainly, you know, he's a guy who's going to embellish calls. We've seen Jokic do that. And I think the disappointing side from Jokic's end is he's got to know better. Like, he's got to know that this isn't helping. And he does. He said this in the past. He knows that arguing to the officials doesn't help him. But he's got to find a way to control it and be able to not put his team in a position like that when they're losing in the third quarter, when things are starting to slip away, when you really are like, okay, we're not going to make a run now. This thing's going to be over. The last thing you can have him do is get thrown out of a game like that. And I get it. And it was Zach Zarba, another referee who has a history with the Nuggets. But at the end of the day, Jokic has got to be better than that. The problem, though, is he's caught in between this rock and a hard place because he's a star player. That's not up for debate anymore. Jokic is the star player and the face of the franchise of the Nuggets and their best player, and he deserves to get some star player calls. But how do you get star player calls? You got to work the rest, right? That's like an actual thing. The thing that I think he struggles with is he's just not working them the right way. I think he's a little too aggressive with his complaining, a little too frequent with his complaining, and, you know, obviously we can't really hear what he's saying, but certainly doesn't seem like the refs are very receptive to his complaints, where they are to some players. I mean, the refs, for as much criticism as they get, which is fair, they will work with players and listen to what they have to say if you bring it to them respectfully. I think Jokic, one, there's the language barrier, so it probably is hard for him to express eloquently his frustrations. But he also, I think, you know, being a young guy, being caught up in the moment, sometimes just is overly aggressive with the referees, and then you run into situations like this where you got a ref who's got a history with the Nuggets, who's been getting jawed at all night, and he's just gonna say, no, I'm not gonna do it, I'm just gonna throw you out, I'm over it. And that is unfortunately his decision to make, and there's really no way to overturn that. So, you know, Jokic has got to be a little bit more conscious of that, conscious of who the refs that are on the floor, the relationships that he has with them, that the team has with them, and then figure out the best ways to work those guys, because it's not working the way it is now. And he certainly is probably deserving, you know, of some criticism for the way he interacts with the refs, for the way he maybe looks to get fouled a little too much And then when he doesn't get the call, instantly is jawing at the referees. He's certainly guilty of those things. So it's a matter of him kind of reining himself back in, I think, and then also understanding a little bit better the situation and the finesse and the grace that you have to take with certain referees in order to get them to give you the calls that you want. Otherwise, you know, that Clippers game, I think the main thing that we saw was that the injuries had caught up with the Nuggets. Wancho, Malik, Monty, these guys have all been great this season. They've played really well. Trey Lyles, like I said, has come on strong, and he had some good moments in that Clippers game for sure. But the Nuggets have got a little bit they've been very fortunate that those guys have played so well through all these injuries and have been able to provide the shooting and the scoring and everything that you aren't getting because Gary Harris and Will Barton and Paul Millsap aren't on the floor. You know, this game, it just really wasn't there for him. And I think everybody kind of felt like, man, this game, you really did actually feel like the injuries had caught up to them and were hurting them. Luckily, of course, they get quite a bit of rest now before the San Antonio game. So they hopefully will be rested and refocused. And we're hearing these guys are getting closer now. It's funny, it switches at first where we were hearing Will Barton was going to be first. I think Mike Singer of the Denver Post now just reported that it looks like maybe Gary Harris and Paul Millsap will be back before Will, which tells me maybe they took Will to the next step in his rehab, and it maybe he wasn't as far along as they were hoping, so they said, okay, we'll dial this back a little bit. Because, like I said, up until this point, it didn't sound like Will Barton. I think Vic Lombardi last week had said, you know, we expect to see him this week. Now, of course, it comes out that he might be, according to Mike Singer, that he might be still 2 to 3 weeks. So, It's been tough on the Nuggets, no doubt. It's got to be taxing on the guys. Have played very, very well, but when you got a game in LA on an afternoon after you've had a full night's free reign before Friday night, nonetheless, in LA, you know, you got to have your A game because the Clippers, they're not this is what they do every night. It's not like they're, you know, they're not LA is nothing different to them. So this is just another home game for them. If you are the Nuggets and your bench guys, you know, who maybe aren't quite as talented as your starters, aren't 100% or ready up to the game. And I'm not saying they are. I'm just kind of speculating here because, you know, we all know LA and a 3 p.m. tip on an LA game on Saturday could cause some problems for some guys. But, you know, if that was a case and they weren't maybe 100% fresh, well, it's really tough if you're not a Will Barton, a Gary Harris, a Paul Millsap, and you don't have that overwhelming talent to maybe just carry over, not feeling your best in that game. Or maybe being a little fatigued. And so with these guys, I think it caught up to them. That part caught up to them. And then just, again, they were destined for an off game. The Nuggets were destined for an off game. This is the first time the Nuggets have trailed by 20 or more points in a season. It's the first time they really were blown out all year. Every team gets blown out every year, including the teams like the Golden State Warriors. So it happens. But, you know, you hope it doesn't, but they were well past due for a game like this. And so if it happens at a 3 p.m. game in L.A. on a weekend when you've got three of your starters out, I think that's probably, you know, that's the time you want it to happen, because that's as close to a schedule loss or an injury loss, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't make any excuses, obviously. And if it was a matter of, and again, this is just me just speculating based off of, you know, that I shouldn't. I really shouldn't. You know, we don't really know whether or not any of the Nuggets were out partying or in the clubs or whatever like that. You don't know. It could have been a myriad of things, but obviously, LA games are tough on a Saturday afternoon, and so when that all comes together for them, this is the time where you're like, okay, if they're going to lose one, it happens, and certainly it's no excuse to not be prepared for a game. And like I said, I'm not saying that they weren't, but it is what it is. We all know what the NBA is. We all know the way NBA players roll when they're in LA. So you just take it with a grain of salt, I guess. I wouldn't read too much in that. Clippers are a good team as well. I mean, Gallo played well. Montrezl Harrell played well. Tobias Harris played well. That's a collection of a lot of really talented guys over there who maybe no overwhelming stars, but If you're not going to bring your A game against them, you know, they can get one over on you, certainly at home in this scenario like they did. So I wouldn't read a ton into it. It was the most disappointing thing, obviously, coming out of it was Jokic and the ejection. The rest of it, I think, was kind of ancillary to that point. So I think that's where we'll go ahead and we'll wrap up this convo on those. Next, we'll go ahead and bring in Mr. Gordon Gross, talk about the Spurs game.
All been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Let's welcome in Mr. Gordon Gross down in Colorado Springs. Gordon, first things first, man. How was your Christmas?
Christmas is good. I didn't have to work it, so, you know, that's always a bonus.
There you go. That is the best part about Christmas. I wasn't aware. Do you work Christmas often?
I work whenever I have to work, and right now that's pretty much every day. So not working on Christmas was my third day off in 2 months, and I was happy to get it.
Fair enough. Gordon is out on the grind. I myself, I've been spending Christmas down. I'm down on location here in Texas, not in San Antonio, though, so I wasn't actually at the Spurs game tonight. But yeah, man, it's some crazy, we always talk about the weather here on the Pickaxe Pundits. There's some crazy weather going on in Texas right now. Like currently tornado watch. So if I, you hear a large whooshing noise and suddenly I'm gone, you'll know what happens. Anyhow. All right, Gordon, let's get into it. The Nuggets lose to the Spurs tonight. What was it, like 111-103, I think, when it was all said and done. Not their best performance by any means, but they at least made a game of it there at the end. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, both those guys struggled pretty well. Pretty much everybody struggled with the exception of Wancho. I mean, Monty played all right. He shot the ball a bunch.
Right.
Malik played real well there down to the end, but up until then, he had just another guy just kind of shot the ball a bunch. I don't know, you know, I noticed this, and I was saying this just earlier in this episode. I know you weren't here for that segment, but I was saying how the Clippers game, you really started to feel like you finally started to notice the injuries and how they were hurting the Nuggets. I feel like back-to-back games now, that was the case, because when you don't have Jokic going, when you don't have Murray going, I mean, yeah, you get a great game out of Wancho, but it's just not enough. And when you're missing this many guys, like, it's hard. They Jokic and Murray have to come out and play great every night, or they're going to really struggle to win. How concerned, I guess, Gordon, are you now that we're kind of starting to see these injuries actually affect the team?
Well, it's concerning just because they have no more margin for error. Because right. There is no margin for error, you need good games out of Jokic and Murray every time out. And Murray is not a consistent performer. Right. He's, you know, that's just a product of youth. Mm-hmm. But you can't count on Murray to be prime Murray all the time. You're going to get a game every 5 or 6 or 8 games that is, you know, an indicator of things to come, but there's only so far those harbingers will take you. Like, at some point, you're like, yeah, this is great, but man, I need you to shoot 50% from the floor, and I need you to go out there and, you know, put down 6 dimes and 20 points, and that's just not his game right now. And Jokic isn't the kind of guy who's like, well, team needs me, here's my 40-point game. That's not his game either. Like, tonight, he didn't score in the first, half?
Yeah, like, it was rough.
He just passed, and it was great. When they were making it, he had, like, 9 assists and 0 points. But it's not enough. They couldn't pull away. They couldn't put the hammer down because you can't go on a run like that. It's very hard to go on a run if Jokic isn't going to score. That's just the way that it is. And on the road, it's not enough. I'm concerned by the losses that could happen before they get back to full running strength, because getting Gary Harris and Will Barton back isn't going to be enough. Those guys have to get back and get into game action, get into game shape, get into game readiness, be able to play 30 minutes at full efficiency, and that's not going to be game one.
Right, and they got to get integrated into the rotation and into the system. Yeah, exactly. Which that takes a couple games, and so every single time a guy comes back, they're going to have to, deal with that. It could be, it's going to be an interesting upcoming month or so watching the Nuggets kind of integrate all of these guys back in and see how that affects them. I think right now you're basically just hanging on for life and just praying, you know, hey, hopefully Murray and Jokic play well, because if those two guys play well, you got a good chance no matter who you're playing.
You do, and that's the thing. When everything's firing, I think you still need a third guy. I think you need a night this from Wancho or Monte. You know,
or Malik.
Or whatever. But you're gonna need those guys to step up with the extra scoring. But you're literally 2/3 of the way there if Jamal and Jokic can get it going. But you can't afford off nights. You can't and those guys are gonna feel that pressure. The pressure of you're what's left, you'd better make this work.
Yeah, and I think what's disappointing about tonight is, again, I was just saying this on the earlier segment, like you really thought in that Dallas game last week, I really thought, and the games leading up to it, that we were seeing Jokic just kind of take the role of the aggressor because he had no choice, right? I mean, that was, they don't have anybody else out there with all these injuries. And I was talking about how, you know, hopefully he'll blossom in that role and then just keep carrying it forward as these guys start to come back. But now kind of you get this game tonight where, like you said, I mean, he doesn't score in the first half. He ended up with like 10 points. And granted, like I said, he was dishing the ball. But he just, it just wasn't there. And it's really, like you said, it's really tough, man. If he's not scoring, the Nuggets on the road, especially against a well-coached team, a veteran team, they're going to struggle. And the other thing about the game that I noticed, you know, tonight Jokic's got to figure out, I mean, the Spurs played him, aggressively.
Played him playoff hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he was not ready for that. Like, there's just no other way to put it. He was not ready for that tonight, and it worked. And that's something that he's just got to be better. He's got to be prepared for that, especially right now, because of course teams are going to play him like that. I mean, why wouldn't somebody play him like that? Like, you'll take your licks with Jamal Murray, who, yeah, can go off, like we said, but, you know, he's just as likely to have a stinker like he did tonight. I mean, he's not exactly shot the ball well this season on the whole, so... I mean, if I'm coach, I'm looking at it exactly what the Spurs did tonight, and that's how I'm going to attack Jokic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was really my issue was this was kind of a throwback game, but not in a good way. This was a throwback game to Nikola Jokic looking at what's happening to him and saying, oh, they're sending up extra guys at me. I'll pass the ball. And he did. He had 10 assists tonight. Like, he passed the ball. He made the correct basketball decision. And Jamal Murray said, well, I have the ball. I should shoot it. And so he did that, but he did it poorly. Mm-hmm. You know, shot, 25% from the field or something? Yep. You know, that's not good. You can't make 4 of 20 shots or whatever he made tonight and be – it doesn't cut it. It just doesn't cut it. And so what the Nuggets had was a guy who doesn't like to shoot the ball anyway, who was pressed, the ball was pressed out of his hands. And this is what I expect teams to do to him in crucial games, is to say, someone else can beat me tonight. It's not going to be Jokic, and I right. can make it not be Jokic by running guys at him and then running my second rotation guy to the guy who's leaving for Jokic.
Right.
And that's what, I mean, Pop is the guy, and he's played, I mean, he's coached with Nikola before.
Right.
Like, he's messed around with him in, what was it, Basketball Without Borders, right? So.
Right, yep.
You know, he's very familiar with Jokic on and off the court and knows the kind of personality that he has, and that he's an unselfish player. And you can make those guys play the ball your way, and that's what happened tonight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially when you got a guy like that, and you know that he's severely hampered in being that unselfish player because he's got so many weapons that are not available to him. You know, it's different if you want to play that style against Joker when you've got Harris and Barton and Millsap out on the floor. It's a little bit.
Correct.
More difficult to pull off. But in this case, you know, you'll let Juancho Hernangómez score 27 points. You're fine with that, you know, because that's if you can keep Jokic from putting up points, and then if you get to catch Murray on a bad shooting night like they did, then boom, there you go. That's the recipe. On the coaching side, on the other court though, this is, you know, I've been a big Malone defender pretty much throughout his career, including last season, where there were times I felt like I was the only person left on Malone Island. But
you were definitely defending him to me. That's for sure.
Yeah, right. This season though, I thought he's done a great job. But I think this game was probably the first one where I looked at it and I was like, I'm not necessarily sure. The rotations were just really, really odd. And I mean, obviously the injuries play a factor in that, but it was just, I mean, it's not like Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, and Will Barton and all these guys being out is new now. This has been several games in a row now.
Yeah, this is game one of that, right.
Right. And he, for whatever reason, I mean, he just went a bunch of weird ways. We were talking about this right before we came on about, you know, Torrey Craig plays the first full 12 minutes of the game. Nikola Jokic plays basically the whole third quarter and then checks out in the fourth and just never comes back. And you know, the Nuggets actually had a chance there at the end, and I get maybe riding with the guys who got you there and saying, okay, let's see if the bench guys can pull this off. But I don't know. I mean, what did you think? Because I thought his rotations tonight were just really random, and it definitely did not work to their favor.
Well, we talked about it being a throwback game, and this was a throwback game to 2016 Malone, when he would forget to pull Will Barton for the entire second half of the game, you know, and just or forget that he has somebody on the bench he could put back in, you know.
Right.
Those were the kind of bench maneuvers that were happening. And tonight he just, it's not even like he saved anybody. Like, everybody played about 30 minutes. Like, nobody got rest.
Yeah, Jokic played 31
for the next game. You know, so it was just a very strange rotational thing. You know, like, everybody played, you know, Monte had about 30, Beasley had 30, Craig had 34 minutes, which is a lot for Torrey Craig.
Should not happen.
Yeah, that is a lot.
And I don't necessarily understand, like, the thought process. Like, Torrey Craig, why does Torrey Craig need to play that many minutes against the San Antonio Spurs, a team? I mean, I get it. They got DeMar DeRozan, and he's obviously an elite wing scorer. But,
right.
You know, they've played plenty of teams like this, and they haven't had to rely on Craig in that much. And even if they've given him those big minutes, that first quarter was just really, really odd. Because I think that Morris and Beasley are the only two guys he gets off the bench there in the first quarter, and then basically rolls with starters the rest of the way. Then he brings in Lyles to start the second, and it's just they seem like the Nuggets just had a hard time finding their flow because it was a little bit different from what they normally see. And then I think the other thing then at the end of the game, that I mean, you tell me, he basically waves the white flag with about 3 minutes to go in the game. The players, to their credit, do not wave the white flag. They keep pushing. Was it weird to you? I mean, they were down, I think, by like maybe 12 points there at the 3 minute mark. Was it weird to you that he decided at that point, okay, we're gonna basically put in Thomas Welsh and Tyler Lydon and go to our bench, which is essentially, you know, conceding the game?
I had to check the schedule because I really thought that maybe I was wrong and they were playing the Spurs again tomorrow. and he was trying to save some guys in the fourth, but they don't play until Friday. And yes, that will be a back to the first of a back to back, but you can't be saving guys for like three games from now. That's not how this works.
Right.
Like, you got to go play. And so I was very surprised to see them just call it quits. Just say, nah, that's fine. We're okay with taking the L tonight. That was a very strange decision for me. And I know that Mullen won't put it that way. I haven't heard his post game yet, but it was a very strange rotational evening for me, and I think it hurt the Nuggets' flow. I mean, also what hurt their flow was missing shots. But
yes.
Really, the only guys who really, you know, messed up a bunch of shots, I mean, Jamal shot the ball terribly.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, Nikola Jokic didn't do well at 1-for-5 either, but he didn't take that many shots.
Right.
You know, and then Beasley went 8-for-19, and 19 shots for Beasley is a lot. He got 22 points, but he did it on 19 shots.
Right. Same with Morris, too. I think Morris had another one. He was like something like, what, like 16 or so points on 16 shots or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. He had like, 15 points on 16 shots.
Exactly.
And so neither of them did very well. Weirdly, Monte shot fine from three. He just couldn't hit at all inside of the arc.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it, that was true.
Weird to me.
That was true of the team in general. They shot it better from the three-point line than they did from inside the three-point line.
The three-point line kept them in the game, and the two-point line burned them. Yeah, all the twos, they just couldn't hit anything.
No, and it was almost, I noticed it was weird. It was almost like, you know, because they've had so much rest, so you wouldn't expect it. It's almost like when they had tired legs or something, they were leaving a lot of those, you know, Jamal especially leaving a lot of those floaters in the lane short. Monty, I saw leaving some of those floaters in the lane short as well. And
they rotated slow and cut slow tonight, too.
Right.
So they weren't really breaking for the basket the way you would necessarily expect. And Jokic was weirdly slow picking up the double team that was coming to him. He would spin right into guys' hands all the time, like in this game. It was discombobulated, I will go with. It was definitely an out of sorts kind of a game.
Yeah,
too much rest and too much Christmas ham or whatever. Like
that's what I was wondering is because, you know, they had all this rest, so I guarantee you all those guys were given yesterday off, which is fine. I'm not here to say, oh, don't let these guys
spin. Can't
believe
they didn't write suicide. Yeah, I know.
Right, yeah, exactly. I get that, but I do wonder if that didn't have an effect. You know, you get the day off, you're with your families, you're having Christmas, you're really not focused on basketball, which is, like I said, as the case should be, but then it's just hard. You know, it's hard to turn around then and turn around, fly to San Antonio, and then play a game the next day. So... I wonder how much that affected
that's
him.
That's what you need your vets for.
Right
now, they're playing basically zero vets. I mean,
yeah.
their vet is Mason Plumlee.
That is true. Yeah,
that's it. That's the guy who's the veteran presence.
Which is obviously obviously rough. So, yeah, I wouldn't hold anything against anybody in the team for giving the guys letting them have their Christmas, but I do wonder if. That just played a factor in it because, like I said, I mean, we said they had so much time off, but they certainly looked tired. Yep, I would agree. All right, let's go ahead. Let's turn the page. Let's go and look forward to these next two games here, upcoming this weekend. Back to back, Nuggets will play home against San Antonio, and then I can't remember. Are they on the road at Phoenix? They got to be home, right? That wouldn't be. Well, it's the NBA. They could do something
stupid.
It's the
NBA, man. Like the scheduling is ridiculous. So
right there's,
like
Texas
said,
Texas
to Phoenix to whatever to Denver.
Well, Texas to Colorado to Phoenix. I could see it.
Yeah, they are at Phoenix. Yeah, they're not at home.
Yeah,
and then they're back home for New York,
and then
they're out
home
to Sacramento,
and then they're back home against Charlotte.
Yeah,
back on the road for Houston, and then they go. What a dumb schedule.
Well, no, the worst part's going to be the sucky one is the at Miami fly to L.A. for the Clippers.
Well, fly. I think that's a home game.
You're right, that one is a home game, thankfully, so I don't have to go all the way to, I was like, that's gonna be the worst.
You know what's really weird here, so now basically since this that Clippers game,
yep.
That was what, the 22nd up until the 13th of January, so almost a month, about three weeks there, the Nuggets will never play more than either two games in a row on the road or that's it. And then every single game, up until they'll have a four-game homestand, they're starting the 13th. But every single home game, they immediately turn around and go back on the road.
It's just
the very
a
next game.
Schedule. Their whole
really
January
weird.
Schedule is weird. It's a weird mix of teams. It's a weird way to play. It's going to be interesting.
Well, hey, nothing tops playing on the road in Portland, then in Toronto, and then following that up with Orlando, right?
Right? Yeah, trying to just draw a big circle around the country.
It is. All right, well, we're off on a tangent here, but so they obviously get the Spurs again now on Friday back in Denver. I mean, what are we looking for? What kind of adjustments do you think that they make? Does it come down? Obviously, you're going to Nikola is going to have to make that adjustment like we were talking about with the way they defended him. But what else do you think they got to do here to try and get one over on the Spurs? Because to be honest, I think the Spurs are just a really tough matchup, at least right now, especially when you don't have Paul Millsap. Because like as we saw tonight, Mason Plumlee, for as good as he's played, struggles with LaMarcus Aldridge, and without Millsap there, I think that's a tough matchup. But I mean, I don't know. Like, is it just a matter of hey, they got to hit their shots this time, and Jokic just got to figure out how to not pass out of that double team so quickly?
Well, they first off need to hypnotize Jamal Murray and sell him to, you know, remember that he can make shots, that his stroke is pure, and he should make some of these because man, he is leaning on these shots. It does not look good. These aren't. I don't know what's going on with his form, but I want him to get back with his shot doctor or whoever it is and just get it right. Because he does not look like he believes he's going to make it, but he looks like he believes he needs to shoot it. And so that's a very bad mix of problems there. When shooters believe they need to shoot their way out, but it doesn't look like it's going to go in. Like, you watch him pull the trigger, and I'm always surprised right now when it does go in.
Yeah, which is weird with Jamal because that's a guy who's obviously
He's got such a good shot.
Right. His form is pure. And you know he's a good shooter because the guy shoots 90% from the free throw line. Like, exactly. You don't do that if you're not a good shooter.
Yeah, no. His form is great. Yeah, at the line, he's great. In the game, he's very mediocre right now.
I just wonder, because he was questionable, wasn't he, like a couple weeks ago with something, and I'm trying to
Well, he got kicked in the leg again, man. Like, the problem is with Jamal, I never know how badly he's hurt because he always wants to play. So he'll never take time off, and he'll never take the rest to heal. So I don't know what kind of injuries he's carrying. He played an entire season with like double core injuries.
Right.
You know? So you're like, well, of course you can't get any lift on your shot. You know, your whole abdomen is riddled with holes. Like, what are you going to do? So it's... For them, they really need Jamal to step up and actually remember that he is a scorer. That would be useful.
Right.
And then they have to get Nikola to, like you said, make sure that, yes, there is a double team coming. Yes, the smart play is to pass out of it. Sometimes you need to shoot it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You just got to sometimes do that. And that's... that's something a lot of guys on the team can learn. So I was looking back through it. So you're right. He hurt his shin. He also had an issue with the forearm. Right around that time. And it makes because you never know with him, it does make me wonder if maybe he's hurt and that's why he's struggling so much.
Well, and he wouldn't talk about it, and he knows the team needs him because Gary's out.
Right. Yeah,
and Will Barton out. Right. Like he knows he can't go out, so he could be playing on one leg. He'd be like, no, I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
Yep.
He's a gamer. Like that's always been his claim to fame. You know, if you play all 82 games in a season in which you have double hernia surgery, yeah, you get full gamer points for that. That's how that
right. works. Right. Nobody will doubt your toughness. But it does come to a point where you have to wonder, like, how much are you hurting your team, you know, to the point where it's like maybe we're better off. I mean, the problem is that means you're
the problem is there's
Brandon
no one else
Goodwin.
To go to. Like, who's better? You can't put Tyler Wyden in these games and assume that this is going to go better, and you can't give, you know, Torrey Craig 35 minutes a game and feel good about what's going on.
No, yeah, like I said, you'd have to go to Brandon Goodwin. That's the only option you've got left.
Well, obviously, yes. You know, how could we possibly skip the Brandon Goodwin?
Right, which is, yeah. Well, I mean, hey, better than Devon Akun-Purcell, at least according to the Nuggets' actions.
According to the Nuggets, yeah, so. I was going to say. They seem to believe so.
Yeah, it's it's one of those things we're just trying to survive, I guess.
Yeah, and that's really what it is right now the Nuggets are going to have to find a way to persevere, to gut out a couple of victories. The problem is that it's really painful tonight to waste those points, to waste 20-plus from Beasley and 27 from Wancho.
Right.
You know, in a loss. Like, you would hope, if you just brick it and let everyone take a rest, you know, but now you're going to ask those guys to do that again on Friday with hopefully Jamal making some shots, you know, and Jokic scoring. Yeah, and that's a tough ask. You're asking them to, you know, not at that point, you're asking them not to be bench players. You're asking them to step into the starting lineup and succeed as starters and bring it every game, which is one of the reasons that bench players are bench players and starters are starters.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking with good old Sean Walsh and Mark Jackson over on Mile High Sports the other day. I'm not trying to big time anybody here, but you know, I what I said to them, you know, was like, hey, the Nuggets have got a ton of really good. I was talking about the Clippers game in this case, but you know, the Nuggets have got a ton of really good contributions out of guys like Wancho and Monty and Malik, and it's really helped them through these injuries carry that momentum. But you have to understand, like, there is a reason these guys are not everyday NBA starters. Like, it's because they're not as good as those other guys. They're not as consistent as those other guys. And at some point, you know, you had to expect this to happen. And so now, you know, it's a little bit rough to see it happen two games in a row. But like you said, I mean, they don't have any time to wait, because you've got to get back. You got to get right back on this horse here against San Antonio, and you got to go out and play, because whether or not you're a bench player who's in a starting role or whatever, you know, the games are still going to be played. These wins and losses still count, and they've got to get it together, because it's, you know, I mean, yes, they're still sitting in first place in the Western Conference. They're still two up in the loss column on everyone else, but it doesn't take much in this tight of a conference, you know, to quick a couple a losing streak.
Losing streak would be a horrible thing. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's just too tight, and this is where you need your coach to make those adjustments. This is where you need to say, okay, now you know how the Spurs are going to play you. What is your answer? How do you counter?
Yep. It is almost like a mini little snapshot of what Malone might look like in the playoffs right
yeah.
now. You know,
yeah, yeah.
How is he going to adjust?
Game two. Let's go. Yep.
Right. Yep. It's going to be so it'll be that. I didn't even think about that, but that's probably the number one thing I'm watching. I will put that in my preview.
There you go.
Main thing I'm watching on Friday. So of course they've got the tough game there against San Antonio. At least it's at home. Denver has been in general very good at home. This season, they immediately turn around, go down to Phoenix. I guess if you're going to play a back-to-back, Denver to Phoenix is probably about the...
That's about the best you're going to do, yeah.
Right, other than a home-and-home. So, I mean, obviously a back-to-back is still a back-to-back. It's a tough game to win. Phoenix is terrible, though, right? I mean, they're 9-26, I think, is on the season right now.
They've been better.
That's true. Yeah. They have won. They have been winning as of recent. What are they in their last 10? They're 5-5. They're 500 in their last 10. And currently, I don't think I can see the streaks here, but they've been better. But isn't it? Would you still call this, I guess, a trap game?
In what sense? Which game is a trap game?
The Suns game, because you're still playing the freaking Phoenix Suns.
And that you expect that you can just roll in there and do whatever you're going to do?
Well, that you should be able to go in there, even though it's on a back-to-back, you should still be able to go in there, take care of business, and get a win.
I would say it's not a track game, just because it's not like you are... The next game is the Knicks. So the next game is not Houston or... You know
gotcha.
What I mean?
You're not, like, overlooking them.
You're not overlooking them, and you may have just lost to the San Antonio Spurs twice in a row. So.
Right.
If you're on a three-game losing streak, you're not overlooking the Phoenix Suns. You're looking to get healthy right. against the Phoenix Suns. That's when you look to punish a team.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't care if you're tired or not. You look to go in there and take care of business. You're not overlooking them. So I don't consider it a trap game. They need to have enough bodies who are ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, third game in four nights, you're having to use most of your useful bench players for a lot more minutes than they're used to. So, yeah, it's going to be tired legs, and you better drive the hoop. So that'll be fun. But, yeah, I'm hoping that the San Antonio Spurs game winds up being a win. Then you can go into Phoenix and you just make a layup line going toward the bucket and you win that game.
Right.
You know, because for all that they can do, Ayton's not a – he's that's not his skill set yet.
Yep. Yeah, he's not a rim protector. That's
no,
that's
not what he does. So you don't have to worry about, you know, going in and, back cuts are there. You're not going to get stopped guard play. So
right.
You hope you can take both of those. Like, that's the goal, and that should be the goal. That's what Malone should be preaching on the plane. Like, we're literally on the plane back. Go take care of business against San Antonio. Then we have to go down and beat up Phoenix, and we're right back on the horse.
Yeah, exactly. Take care of your business at home, like you should.
Yep.
And then go beat a bad team the next day on the road, like you should. And then
if you're the number one team in the West, then the Phoenix Suns don't trip you up.
Exactly. And neither do the San Antonio Spurs at home. To be honest, that's
also
true. That's just kind of the way
it goes. The Spurs have made their bacon at home. They are always good at that. And they lost maybe what, 5 games all year at home so far. So. Right. I expected that to be a tough game in San Antonio, and Denver historically plays very poorly in San Antonio anyway.
Right.
You know, but now you have the chance to take it back. You expect to split the series, so go split it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Go split it, and like we said, take care of business against Phoenix, and I think you're fine. It's interesting because we've seen so many times. I've pretty much moved past the point of being like, oh, you know, Nuggets have passed. This is a moment where they would maybe drop 2 in a row here and suddenly go on a 3-game losing streak. Like, I'm past that of looking at that. I think this team's shown enough times this season that they're not the same team they were last year in terms of that kind of mental preparation.
Right.
But at the same time, man, I'm still nervous. Like, I could still definitely see them dropping.
And any of these times, man, it can happen. And any of these times you run into those, well, this would be the time if they're going to do it. It's set up for you to do that.
Right. Absolutely. All right, we'll tell you what, we will go ahead, we'll call it right there. Appreciate you guys sticking with us and letting us wait till after Christmas to get this one up. We do apologize. We'll be back on our regular schedule next week. Make sure you guys are following all of us on Twitter. I'm at Zach Mikosh. Gordon is at GMoneyNugs. Of course, follow at Pickaxe Pundits and at Denver Stiffs. We are over on Instagram at The Denver Stiffs. On Facebook as well. Give us a follow and a like there. Make sure you are subscribing to our YouTube channel. Best place to get those pregame and postgame press conferences. And make sure you're also subscribed to the Denver Stiffs Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher. I don't know. Gordon,
and
what's another
really,
podcast? I was like, I have no idea. I have an iPhone. I listen to it on iTunes. But we'd appreciate it if you guys could subscribe and leave a rating. You guys have been doing awesome. We've definitely seen a lot more listens as the network now. And I guess this will be our second month now. Third month, I guess, technically. We started in October. So yeah, it's been awesome. We appreciate all you guys listening and following along to not only to the Pick Exponents, but all the shows on the network. It's been really cool. We're glad you guys are enjoying it. Alrighty, Mr. Gordon Gross, I appreciate you coming on, sir.
Absolutely. Good to have you, and hopefully we get a couple wins coming up.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.